Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, our topic is keeping bees in Alaska. This summer, I heard a Science Friday program that dealt with certain pesticides and their effect on birds and bees. For several days after, I kept bumping into Alaskans who were talking about the show and expressing interest in bees and bee health. Hence, today's show. In the next hour, we're going to have the privilege of talking to two really great experts on bees who are in the studio with us today. Please welcome Tom Elliott. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom is Vice President of the South Central Alaska Beekeepers Association and a keeper of bees here in Alaska for 33 years. If you don't know the answer, Tom, I don't think anybody will. And I'd also like to welcome Dina Tengue. Did I say that right?
Okay. You did.
A keeper of bees for a shorter period of time, 3 years, but very dedicated. Like Tom, she overwinters her bees, so we'll hear a bit about the challenges of doing that, and we'll also hear about how to grow bee-friendly gardens. So welcome to you, Dina.
Thank you.
So happy to have you both here. Before we get started, I want to refer to our listeners to our website, alaskapublic.org. Find the Hometown Alaska button there and click on the headline. Open it up, and you're going to see all kinds of links to really useful articles on how-tos or maybe a colony collapse, which is a dramatic news story that's been going around the U.S. for a couple of years, and also a link to that Science Friday show that launched our show here today. Lastly, if you're a beekeeper, give us a call. I've heard that local garden clubs are doing some research on bee health and bee-friendly gardens, and we'd love to hear from you and find out what you've learned. So give us a call. If you're in Anchorage, you can give us a call at 550-8433. Or outside Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. And we're also happy to take your emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, so let's get started. I wanted to ask both of you how you got started. What was the thing that triggered bees for you? Who wants to leap in here?
I'm not sure. I've always been interested. I can remember as a kid, my brother and I, this was in the Mojave Desert in California. We used to catch ants and put them in jars and make colonies of ants. But since we never caught a queen, eventually they'd all die of old age.
You're interested a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. The thing that first got me thinking about bees was one day my dad went off to work with a friend of his, a guy he worked with. His name was Depot Dan. And he went off to work with him with his bees. And, you know, I didn't think much about it till he came home with a gallon jar filled with honey and honeycomb. Then I thought about it.
There's something in this.
Yes. I read about bees every book I could find for years. And on and off, I'd get started again. Mm-hmm. But that's when it started for me.
Now, are you retired now?
Yes.
What did you do for your work? It wasn't related to bees. Bees was an avocation?
No, I was in construction engineering with mm-hmm. the state of Alaska.
Mm-hmm. But always having bees on the side.
Well, for 30-some years.
Yeah, that's great.
It wasn't until I ran into people from the Bee Association at the fair. You mean I can keep bees here? So that winter I got equipment and ordered bees and started the very next year.
So long time passion growing from your childhood. But that's so cool. How about you, Dina? How did you...
I actually am one of those people that is allergic to pretty much everything around me. And I noticed that when I had local raw honey, I felt better. I stopped getting so many illnesses that I was constantly getting. And so I thought, well, I'm going to do this myself. And I have been doing it for 3 years. And
did you join the association to
I
get started?
I did right away.
We have a link to the South Central Alaska Beekeepers Association on our website.
It was such a help for me because being new, a newbie, so to speak.
A newbie.
I was a newbie, yes. I had so many more questions than I had answers. Mm-hmm. And by going to the SABA, or the Southeastern Association of Beekeepers, I got all my answers there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many people there that have years, like Tom, of experience. And Alaska has different challenges than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit intimidating at first.
Yeah. You know, you think of those long winters. But before we get there, because there's so much to talk about, I wanted to talk about the magic that is a hive and what goes on there. And
they're fascinating. They're addictive.
Yeah.
I started with one and I have 10.
You have 10 10 hives.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, I mean, let's talk about the roles. Now, there are worker bees, which I learned by reading before the show that they are all female. And I guess you said prepubescent. They don't have a sex life, basically.
Yeah, they never mature sexually.
Yeah. And they do everything from nursing to cleaning to all the jobs in the hive. Drones are a different kind of bee. But why don't you tell us about them, Tom?
Well, the drones are the male. Since they grow from an unfertilized egg, the interesting thing about drones is drones do not have a father, but they do have a grandfather. This is a thing that is commonly bantered about drones. But they're larger and they make noise. They can't sting, since the sting from the honeybee is a modified ovipositor.
Mm-hmm.
And
their one role in life is to mate with a queen?
Their one role in life is to mate with a queen from a different colony.
Okay.
See, a queen only mates once in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe over one or two or three days, but it happens when she's about 10 days old, and after that, she doesn't mate anymore. But a new queen hatches out in another colony somewhere far away, further away than the drones. I'm getting lost there, but they will go out. There's drone congregation areas where drones will go and fly around waiting for a queen.
Oh.
And then the queen will find this drone congregation area.
Have a party.
And she'll go there to mate. And then, but the queens fly to a drone congregation area further away from the colony than her drones do. So this prevents inbreeding.
I see. And this is all just instinctual with them.
This is built in.
Yeah. And let's see. I read that the queen bee goes on a marriage flight. That's where she's going out to these drone areas. What's a typical drone area? Have you been out in the woods and seen them? What is it? Is there something typical about it?
No, I don't know what all the conditions are. And I've never seen one. In fact, they take place 80 feet up in the air. So
yeah, they're in flight. They don't land.
Wow. Yeah, this is all 80 feet up in the air. So, and they're not very big.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to spot. And it's only been in the last very few years that anyone has ever been able to see or take a picture of bees mating.
I had no idea that it was that rare. So I read a statistic that in the spring, Alaskans generally bring up about 9 million, I think that was the number, 9 million honeybees. We have local pollinators that are here, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Let's talk about how you get started. I know you guys are overwinterers, and we'll talk about that too, but if you're just coming to this, besides connecting up with the South Central Beekeepers Association, how does it begin for you? Could you go to magazines and start ordering bees?
No, you don't. I would not recommend ordering bees from an unknown sort of source.
Mm-hmm.
Contacting SADA, you'll find several people that bring packages of bees up. There's one in Eagle River, Jack.
Jack's in Anchorage.
Is he in Anchorage? Okay, Jack.
Yes,
and
I found
Steve,
Jack.
And Steve Victor's out in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those gentlemen.
So they're kind of, they'll bring in lots of bees and then they can provide.
Then you can buy them from them, or we have disbursement hubs, so
yes,
to speak.
Yes, and this happens in like April?
April.
Okay.
Usually, and sometimes there's two shipments. So if you can't get your bees, if you're not ready on the first one, they usually have a second one.
Okay. And I guess I wanted to ask, you know, how expensive is that?
Well, it's not as expensive as fishing, but it's costly. It's costly to get it started.
But honey sells well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes, it seems to sell very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really out of touch. I haven't bought equipment in many years.
Because you're overwintering your bees.
Because I have, I can tell you, to start up a hive, to get your bees, to get the hive components that you need, the main bigger deep boxes that people have seen, and then there's shallower ones that you want the bees to build their honey in.
Mm-hmm.
That will cost you around $500.
Oh, okay.
To start up a hive.
Okay.
That's complete with your bees, all your equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It'll cost you right around $500.
And I would urgently recommend people to start with at least two, because if you have just one, you've got what you've got is a nascent colony, and any problem happens, you may need a second colony to help them out. So.
Support. Yeah, mm-hmm. Support network. Okay, so maybe 1,000 you might
need.
And
there's another option. If you are willing to go through winter, beekeeper, but I wouldn't recommend it for a first-time beekeeper.
Yeah.
There are always people in the fall that will give bees away
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to overwinter. So
right.
you can also, after your first year of buying a package and learning, or two packages, as Tom recommends, and learning how to maintain your bees, making sure you really love doing it.
Right.
Then in the fall, there are always people willing to give you their bees.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build up, which is what I did. I went to rescue bees, and now I've got more than I can
handle. Yeah, because
handle
if people
almost.
Aren't going to overwinter, they literally
they
have
them.
To kill their
they
bees.
Do. Which, they have to kill them.
Because they would not make it through a winter
no,
in Alaska.
Not unattended. Mm-hmm. Although I did hear one story of a guy that thought he had killed his bees, and they were up on a rooftop hive, and he went back in the spring, and they were there.
Must have been a warm spot or something.
It must have been a warm spot.
Yeah, that you hear stories like that once in a while. I heard mm-hmm. about a guy who stuck his bees out in the back behind his garage and just ignored them, and they were going in the spring. But
it's rare.
It had to be a south-facing.
Usually yeah. we're getting queens from a warm climate who are not adapted to a long, cold winter, so it's really harder to get those through.
Get mm-hmm. them through. By the way, I just want to let folks know, if you just joined us and you're wondering, what are they talking about? We are talking about beekeeping in Alaska, and also we're going to talk a little bit about native pollinators, because there's a lot of them in Alaska. And I want you to know, our guests are Tom Elliott from the South Central Alaska Beekeepers Association. He's kept bees for 33 years. He knows what he's talking about. And Dina Tengue, who has been doing it only for 3 years, but totally smitten because you were allergic to so many things. You wanted, you know, to have that local honey, which people say might help you get over some of your allergies. And she overwinters, Tom overwinters. And Dina can also tell us a little bit later in the program about the right kind of gardening to have for bees. And I think we're talking about honeybees as well as native pollinators. The
yes.
same things work for both?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's our numbers. If you've got questions, don't be shy. We've got in Anchorage, 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so back to the bees. Let's see. We were talking about what it costs. I know something I read was, I'm always going out in my yard and plucking those dandelions in the beginning of the spring because I'm so sick of them, and I feel they're going to take over my whole yard, which they are. But I've learned to leave them there because that's one of the first pollen foods that these bees can find.
So, not only for honeybees, but for our native bees that are mm-hmm. just waking up.
Yeah, so that's
a critical,
good deed.
Absolutely
that
critical. Your neighbors may hate you, but the bees and the butterflies and moths, and
yeah.
all those will love you.
And the other thing is that the birch pollen is so important early in the season.
And so are willows.
And willows, okay.
Yeah, our native willow is a really early source of pollen.
And that would be for both the kept bees and the wild bees.
Yes.
Okay. And the honeybee is a social bee. It makes this, I mean, I've heard descriptions of it as an organism, like all these bees making this giant organism. So what can we say about that? I think trying to get people's heads wrapped around that concept.
Well, that's... That's a fun thing, because I use that analogy a lot.
Yeah.
You know, during the winter is a prime example. The bee colony stays together. They just hang together and form, on and off at least, a cluster. And it's so the colony as an organism is idle, hibernating, so to speak.
Just hanging out.
But the individual bees keep moving. They keep moving and they produce warmth.
Keep the whole organism
keep everything
warm.
Going.
Yeah. I've got a caller. I'm just going to bring her in here. We've got, it's Steve, sorry. Steve, hi. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, guys.
So you're calling in from Sutton. What's your question?
Well, I recently built a large greenhouse, and my first year's cucumber and cantaloupe crops failed because of lack of pollination. And I want to know, would bees live with a front and a back door? Could I plant a hive in one of my window frames and have bees pollinate early in the spring?
Bees do not do well in a greenhouse.
As they try to fly straight up to the roof.
Yeah, I would recommend bumblebees. You can buy bumblebees and have bumblebee colonies, and they're now, I'm not really familiar with it, but they are used in greenhouses.
Now, I have several greenhouses in my gardens, And I have side vent windows that when the weather is warmer, which it would be for you when your cucumbers and your other crops are in flower, leaving a side window or two open, they will find those. And I have bees coming in and out of my greenhouses constantly, but they have figured out which way to go to get out. I think if you had a colony attached to your greenhouse, you'd lose a lot of bees.
As in they would overheat inside the greenhouse itself?
Well, that would be one of the things, but also they would want to fly to the roof. Bees remember where they go. So if they accidentally found an open window, they'll go back, they'll tell everybody else, oh, I found this place, and you have to go here, and you got to go there, and that's how you get back out, and that's how you get home. And it's amazing what they remember.
I saw some footage of a hive where a bee is doing a dance,
yeah.
And it says the
well,
vigor
Well, that's what
of...
she's telling them. You go through that side window over here, and there, and then you can find flowers, then this is how you get back out. Now, that would work better for you, Steve, if you have a bee hive somewhere on your property.
Well, I happen to know a gentleman in the valley that has 60 to 70 hives, and maybe I'll see if I can borrow a hive or two and plant them by.
I would do that, and make sure that there's an exit, an entrance and an exit that are opposite each other on your greenhouse.
All right. That's already taken care of, so it sounds like I might be able to hopefully enlist their help in pollinating.
And they would be thrilled.
Well, I learned
now,
something.
While I have you on there, talk more about the bumblebee option.
Well, I know about honeybees. Bumblebees, I don't know a lot about.
They're local, right?
There are a lot of local honeybees, bumblebees.
We have 19 varieties of the 49 on the North American continent are here in Alaska. Now, the queen is the only one that will survive the winter. She stays in mouse burrows or in insulation in a house or a variety of different places. But she lays enough brood in the spring that her colony builds back up. But you can, I believe, get some.
I know that they're available commercially. You can buy a colony. I don't know about keeping a queen alive over the winter because they raise a new queen each fall. But I have read about them being used in greenhouses. Practicality.
Now, if you buy, quote, bumblebees to live in a greenhouse, would they need access to the outdoors, or could I?
Oh yes.
Yeah, they couldn't live on just what's in a greenhouse.
No,
I see. Not enough flowers for it. Well, I'm going to have to explore this further because I had lovely plants with very few fruit last year.
Now there's another option, Steve. If you're very patient, bring your cup of coffee or tea out with you in the morning and a little tiny paintbrush.
Well,
and that works too. I've done that.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. I'm loving
you
this
bet.
Talk.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for calling. So let's see. Where were we before we took our call? We were. I forget.
Yeah, we're dead air.
One question that came to my mind when Steve was talking was: do native bees and honeybees interact well? Is there any tension between the?
I have never seen it, and I have in my gardens. Like I said, I grow everything for the bees. It happens to be beautiful, but everything is planted thinking of honeybees or the native bees, and I'll see both of them on the flowers together with no issues whatsoever.
The only place there's an issue is in the spring. Bumblebees will go into a new colony looking for sustenance. You know, there's smells like nectar and honey in there, so she heads in. Some bumblebees are killed every spring by doing that.
Yes.
If you find dead
a few
ones,
dead ones in the hive.
Yeah, in the hive or
they're not
the
really
front.
Welcome in,
no.
in a honeybee
Nothing
hive.
Is welcome in a honeybee hive except for the bees from that hive.
Okay, all right. So that's interesting. And what about, you know, wild bees fertilizing a queen that's a honeybee? That doesn't,
they're,
that sort of
they're
thing.
Not, they're not the same variety.
So
there's only, mean. I can't even remember, the only honeybees in America are the Apis mellifera. There aren't any others, so there's no other source of interbreeding. There are a lot of different strains, but they're all the same species.
Okay. Let's see. We were talking about, for the beginner starting out, one of the things I thought you both would be good to answer is, what are some common mistakes people make that they just don't know, you know, when they're starting out?
Not feeding them enough.
Because early in the spring,
you have to feed them. You can't just stick them out there and hope that they're going to do okay.
Mm-hmm.
I buy hundreds of pounds of sugar for 10 hives, but for a single hive, you wouldn't have to do that much. But plain white sugar.
What's mixed, the recipe?
I use 2 parts of sugar to 1 part water. What do you use, Tom?
Well, it varies, but yeah, I use probably equal amounts because I, you know, there's different purposes for different formulas.
Right.
But I just want to make sure they have enough, so I've given them a little stronger than is necessarily recommended. That way they're storing some, and they're raising
they're
brood with it.
Mm-hmm. And if you do that, and in the spring, I'm filling up their, I use an old quart mason jar with a lid with little tiny holes in it, right on top inside,
mm-hmm.
and they'll go through one of those a day.
Wow. So do they go through the holes into...
They have the little tiny proboscis, like the little tongue that comes up through those holes.
Okay.
And because of the vacuum effect of the inverted jar, they're able to pull it out without just letting it pour all over the hive.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So that's good. How about you, Tom? Is that how you do it?
I recommend about 10 pounds of sugar to get a colony going.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go too long because... If
then you're in
keep
the honey
feeding them
season.
Too long, then suddenly you got sugar in your honey.
Yeah,
and you don't want that.
You
I mean,
don't want
that's
that.
Not.
Yeah. I pull my sugar off in May when I start to see dandelions out and the willow blossoms are out.
You got to go
sugar
work
water
for your
is,
dinner.
Yeah,
now.
Pretty much.
In fact, as soon as the stores in the colony start going up, I stop feeding. But a lot of times, I don't feed them at all because I have. Stores left over from bees that didn't make it through the winter because they don't all.
Mm-hmm. Even when you're doing everything that you can. How about, I know we've talked about colony collapse and they're still trying to figure that out, but have there been problems in Alaska where, you know, and you said it can happen. You can have a hive going and then you develop problems. And we talked about food being an issue, ventilation being an issue, but what are some of the other problems people run into?
I don't think anyone knows for sure what exactly the problem is. I believe there's a number of things. The bees are exposed to agricultural chemicals of various sorts, especially the neonicotinoids. I mean, those are deadly, but they're exposed to all sorts of chemicals out there, fertilizers, and even, you know, things that are fed to the bees to protect them from parasites and diseases.
Right.
And, you know, they work them to such a point. I mean, some of these bees are just worked continuously for the whole season, and they just collapse after a while. And I don't believe there's a single cause known yet, but the colony gets weaker and weaker, and then some disease, generally a virus, will weaken them to the point where they just can't do it anymore.
Yeah. I just wanted to describe the scene I saw watching a video of bees, which was the agricultural migration of bees on these big flatbed trucks, kind of wrapped in cellophane, big hives.
Netting. Not cellophane.
You know, I thought cellophane looked weird, but it really looked like cellophane, but maybe it wasn't. Anyway,
they got to breathe.
How could they breathe? Yeah. But, you know, trucked across country to this movie was showing Central California and the almond fields, miles and miles of almond fields with beautiful pink flowers, and let the bees out, and that their job is to pollinate for miles and miles and miles. I'd never heard of that. I lead a naive life, I guess. I just thought bees were in our backyards, but they actually have a huge impact on agriculture.
They do.
So, yeah. So.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I remember driving somewhere with my folks, and there'd be a big truck covered with beehives. Well, they aren't as big. They weren't as big then as they are today. But.
Yeah. I'm going to throw out our numbers for our listeners again. If you just join us, that's Tom Elliott talking from the South Central Alaska Beekeepers Association, joined by Dina Tangway, who's also a couple years into her bees and is also really focused on growing a garden for bees. And give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752. Or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. You know, this association that you guys, that we've mentioned, the South Central Beekeeping Association, does it go all year round? Is it something people who are interested in?
We have a monthly meeting.
Well, we generally don't meet in December because our meeting time is too close to Christmas.
That's
and
decent
we
of you.
Sometimes, we don't always meet in August because at the end of August is fair time. Though the last couple of years we have been meeting, even in August.
So. Yes. And I heard that you typically have a booth at the fair.
We do. And right outside the agricultural building.
And are you
And inside.
And inside, true.
Do you have a hive there? Are you selling honey there? What are you doing there?
We have a co-op where we sell the honey.
Right. The co-op is separated from the association.
Yeah.
But beekeepers from the association, well, other beekeepers too, I expect.
Yeah, all beekeepers.
Can bring honey in and have it sold in that booth. And the booth has a faithful following. People come there every year because it's one place you can get good local honey.
100% local.
Raw, yeah, 100% raw local honey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there it's not always easy to do that.
So even a backyard beekeeper who has more honey than they want, maybe that happens.
They can
maybe
bring it up and sell it.
They could also, mm-hmm. Okay, so you can find Saba on alaskapublic.org and find out when they're meeting next.
And you can Google it.
Yes, you can Google it. It pops right up, I know. So that might be a way of like it, sort of interning yourself or... what's the word? Apprenticing yourself a little bit to this group and learning and reading and just kind of gathering from some of the collective wisdom. So would you say, Tom, it's growing, that there's more and more interest in this from your years in the association?
It seems to be. We fill the room. There's a lot of people at meetings.
Yeah.
And I'm going to back up here.
Sure.
The best way to learn is to go with somebody who's experienced and knows.
Mm-hmm.
I learned with a man who'd been keeping bees virtually all his life,
mm-hmm.
and that was extremely helpful to me.
Mm.
And of course, I suppose you learn bad things as well as good, but you learn, you know, how to work with bees. You learn all sorts of things,
yeah.
And you get to see, instead of seeing one or two colonies, you can see dozens and dozens. You see all sorts of things you'd never seen.
Otherwise. When you're in a group like that.
Yeah.
Do you have bee colony visitation?
No, we don't really. We used to.
But people can show slides.
Cook Inlet Beekeepers Association used to do that. Fletcher Miller and I would go around every weekend to visit people who wanted someone to come and take a look at their bees.
Yeah.
So that was extremely helpful.
You could have a visit from an expert, maybe. Mm. That's something you might, you know, arrange.
My first year, there's usually somebody that is willing to mentor a new beekeeper,
mm-hmm.
you know, and kind of somebody that you can call on. That, hey, I got this question. What are they doing? What are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
Which is your first year. What are they doing? You say that a lot.
Uh-huh.
What is going on?
Yeah.
And there's almost always somebody in the association that is willing to help you.
That's great. I feel like I don't want these critters depending on me and I don't know anything. I mean, that's too scary, mm-hmm. you know. So.
So you're ready to start, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I want to retire and just do all these fun things. And
don't wait till you retire.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't start keeping bees until I was 40, and I wish I had started 20 years sooner. I mean, it's just such a fascinating hobby.
You love your bees. You end up loving your bees.
Yeah.
And you never think you would love an insect, but you love your bees.
That's great. I love the way you guys talk about it. Well, we're going to take a little break, but I'm just going to remind you there's Tom Elliott in the studio with us and Dina Tangway. We're talking about how to keep bees healthy in Alaska. And coming up in the second half hour, we're going to talk about overwintering bees, harvesting the honey, what are some of the challenges that come up there. And we're going to also include a little bit about how to grow a really a bee-friendly garden, and both for honeybees, but also for our many, many, many local pollinators. So join us. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and this is Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Thank you. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we have Tom Elliott from the South Central Alaska Beekeepers Association in the studio with us, and Dina Tangway, also from that same association. Tom's been keeping bees for 30 years, and Dina has been keeping them for 3 years. They both know a lot. They can answer all kinds of questions, so I'm going to throw our number out for you. If you, even if you are a beekeeper and you just want to share a little bit of wisdom, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you're like me, you've never done it before and you're trying to ponder what this would be like, give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. And we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, during the little break, the music break, we were talking about what would be useful to tell our listeners. And we were talking about the different types of honeybees and what does well in Alaska. Is that a good summary? So let's talk about that.
Well, there are a number of strains of honeybees. As I said before, they're all Apis mellifera, so they're all the same species.
Okay.
But there are a number of different strains. The most popular strain in the United States is what we call Italians, Apis mellifera mellifera. But there are Carniolans, there are
which are more Caucasians.
Cold-hardy. Yeah. They tend to winter better. But the queens that I used to get from Canada before the government stepped in to help me.
You'll have to explain that later. But yeah.
These were all Italians, and they went through the winter here just like the books say. I mean, there was never a
problem. So my husband's Italian. He's going to say, why do they call those bees Italian?
Because they came from that
the Mediterranean.
Part of
okay.
There were no bees. There were no honeybees in the in the Americas when Europeans first came here. So all of our bees came from Europe.
Okay.
And the bees from the central part of Europe are the ones we ended up with. The Caucasians came from the Caucasus Mountains. The Italians, the Carniolans. I mean, they all came from different regions. My queens that I'm working with now, which are just fine, they're Russians. They were they were imported from Russia, and I don't know their genetic background to help resistance to varroa mites, which I don't know that we'll ever get to that. But they winter nicely.
Now, these bees can all. I mean, when you have a Russian queen, do you have to have Russian? All you know, whole colony of Russian bees or
well, yes and no.
Uh-huh.
The European bees have a different enough kind of pheromone signature that it's harder for them to accept a Russian queen.
Oh.
But they will do it. It's just a little harder.
Wow.
But,
interesting.
But you know, I have I brought in 3 Russian queens. And one just was never accepted. The colony went queenless. The other two did fine and came right through the winter.
So it must have been the personality of that third one, right?
Yeah, something like that. But no, the queens are identified by a smell. My mentor used to call it their perfume. That technically, it's a pheromone.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard of pheromones in different kinds of...
No, only the queen has
Well,
this?
The queen is the only one that has the queen pheromone.
Okay.
But they all have a scent in that hive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hive has their own scent.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
So you'll see, if you see a bee from another hive gets in while you're working with your bees, all the girls from the hive you're working on will get very annoyed with her and kick her out because they know she doesn't belong. She smells different.
Oh, wow.
And a large part of that is the queen pheromone.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there are... We got off to that, but that's the thing.
It's interesting.
But there are different pheromones. Larvae give off a pheromone that is attractive to the young workers because then they take care of them. The workers give off pheromones, at least 2 probably. I mean, I don't even know. I don't remember. There's a lot of pheromones. The whole hive is essentially organized with pheromones. And,
so interesting.
Because it's dark in there, they can't do sign language very effectively.
Right, so it's all what you can smell, and all the communication is through smell.
And vibration, too.
And vibration also.
Which is the little dance that the...
Yeah, but pointing out where the good pollen and nectar stores are. Well, you know, I'd like, Dina, for you to maybe think back to your first year and some of the... experiences that you had or the surprises that you had.
Well, my first year, I was terrified of being stung. And I quickly came to realize that it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, you swell up a little bit and it itches, but it goes away. It doesn't kill you, generally, unless you're allergic to bees.
Yeah.
But most people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, and I realized, I guess what I realized is they have different personalities. Bees actually one day are happy when you're doing something, or another day that you can hear the sound. You start to learn to read the mood of your beehive.
Wow.
And that was a surprise. I never realized that bees can communicate with us their state of mind so easily.
So can bees have a blue day?
Yeah, they can have cranky days.
And they can have an exuberant day.
Or they can have happy-go-lucky, oh, no big deal, go ahead and do what you want to do days.
Yeah. So sometimes when you approach your hive, do you back off and say, okay, girls?
Well, my husband has learned that we don't mow the lawn in front of the hives at a certain time of day.
That does not
He was greeted unhappily the last time he did that.
I'm going to welcome a question we've got from Rhonda. This is a good one. Is placement of hives important? Can I place hives in the spruce forest on our property?
I wouldn't recommend it. It's going to be too cold. My hives are out where they get full sun.
Okay.
They need that sun in the mornings to get going.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the morning.
Especially in the morning,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would never recommend putting them inside of a dark area like that.
Okay.
They will just die.
We've got pretty good consensus here from our two experts.
Oh, yeah.
Tom is shaking his head. Yes, that's the way.
If you have a space that is south-facing against a building or out in the full sun where I live, out in the valley, our particular spot, we have sun all the time.
You know, when I think about the pictures I've seen of hives, and they are out in the sun. So I guess that's just something they
need it.
They need it
yeah.
warm. Do they actually speed up when they get warm? I mean, the activity of the hive?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The more heat there is outside, the less bees have to stay inside to keep the cluster warm. They have to keep the babies, you know, up in the low 90s. I think it's about 94 degrees mm-hmm. Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's 80 degrees out, it doesn't take that much. But if it's 40 degrees out, they most all have to stay inside to keep them warm. They don't come out until it's probably 45 or 50.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think of our variable summers here in Alaska. You know, we probably had, I would think, a nice summer this summer. But
I
can
agree.
Remember some summers where you felt like it can't be winter yet. We haven't had summer. And I guess I'd like to hear
And they don't particularly care for those days that are raining and cold and drizzly, but I have bees that do go out. I've got some good hard workers. They'll go out anyway.
Yeah.
But you won't see anywhere near the number of bees out of the hive on a day like that.
Right, right. So they like sunshine. They like warmer temperatures.
Absolutely.
And that can affect their production, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Now, bees can fly for up to 2 miles away from their hive.
That's really
actually, it's more than that.
Well,
even
over about 2.5 miles or maybe a little more, they burn up enough of the nectar that they're getting reduced returns. If they're flying a relatively short distance, 2 to 3 miles, they can stock up and they can fly out and bring it back. But if they're flying further than that, which they don't do unless they really have to, then the percentage they get back is less.
So the other thing what I was getting at was if she has an area where she wants to put them that's a spruce forest, if she can put it out in the sun and make sure that there's a good source for pollen and nectar for those bees somewhere around there,
mm-hmm.
she should do all right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it can be near spruce.
It can be near it, but not in it. And she should also make sure that wherever she's at, there's going to be fireweed or dandelions or birch.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to add something. Almost no one will have the perfect spot for bees. You pick the best spot you can, and it either will succeed or not. If you're in the shade, though, if you don't have sun at least part of the day, preferably in the morning, chances are pretty good that you're never going to go anywhere.
Why don't you, Tom, describe what your bee setup looks like? I mean, if you can, paint a picture for us. And then we're going to ask you to do the same thing, Dina.
My bees all face south. My hives all I have four right now that I'm going into winter with. But whenever I have, they're always facing south. A little southeast might be better to catch the early sun, but I have trees in the way there. So I don't have a perfect spot.
Mm-hmm.
There's some trees along the road there, and I keep signaling with my hand. I know you guys out there can't see that.
But. Yes, he's very active with his hands. I think there's bees in the room here, yeah.
But then during the middle of the day, late morning through early afternoon, I have nice direct sunlight.
Mm-hmm. And is it important to have them up off the ground or not?
I have mine elevated.
Yeah, I think it is.
If nothing else,
you'll get moisture. Humidity, the bottom of your hive will get wet, and it will start, the moisture goes through. Mm-hmm. They don't need any extra moisture. They're generally trying to get rid of moisture because they take nectar with, you know, anywhere from maybe 4 to... It's a very small amount of sugar anyway, mm-hmm. and they have to condense that. So they've got a lot of water to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
So moisture is definitely not a good thing.
Okay.
And if your back is beginning to bother you, like mine more than beginning, you need to have them up because
it's easier to work.
It's hard to work those bees bending over.
Okay.
And those hive bodies, those big boxes, can weigh 100 pounds sometimes.
Well, that's probably...
At least, I'm saying with two of them together.
Oh, two of them together, you can probably go well over them. But you can get 50 pounds of honey in a box like that.
Wow.
And you figure the bees and the equipment itself, it'll be 60 or 70 pounds. And when you're bending over and lifting that with just the tips of your fingers...
It gets a little difficult.
You know, we've got a bunch of questions coming in, so let's ask our experts a few questions. How do you protect your hives from bears and other non-human honey lovers?
Hot wire.
Yeah, that's it. I have an electric fence.
A little electric fence.
Okay.
I got bears in a couple of times, and I put up an electric fence, so I don't have that problem mm-hmm. anymore.
Okay.
And they're not that expensive. They're easy enough to get a little small, you know.
Roughly
no
a couple hundred, 100 or something like that?
I don't even think, I don't remember. I
don't
got
remember,
mine years ago.
Uh-huh.
I think it's less than that. You have enough wire to, I have a lot of wire. I have a little horse corral that doesn't have horses, it has bees. But mm-hmm.
I have a little controller that will do 300 feet of fence has got more than enough power to keep a bear dissuaded.
Yeah. Good. Here's another question. If you have a hive in your backyard, will they leave you alone if you're eating in your backyard? Will they attack if your lawnmower gets too close?
It depends upon the time of day, like I was saying. Mm-hmm. My husband waits till the bees have all gone to bed at night before he mows.
Oh, so that won't rouse them. They won't get disturbed.
No.
If they're not flying, they don't care.
Mm-hmm. And I work in my gardens constantly, and I have honeybees. You brush up against the flowers. They don't even sting you. Mm-hmm. They're busy doing their thing. They don't feel threatened. Mm-hmm. We have, I don't even know, with 10 hives how many bees I've got on my place, but a lot.
But actually, they won't be any more concentrated in your yard than they will be outside. Bees don't stay in one spot. They spread out.
They do. Because
they're covering... As we talked earlier, a circle probably 2 to 3 miles
around their home.
You're going to have more trouble with yellow jackets than you ever will with honeybees mm-hmm. eating in your backyard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and bees are not interested in your eating.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow
or your
jackets
food.
Will
no.
be interested in your food. Yeah. Bees don't care.
Honeybees don't have any interest in it at all.
Hot dogs do nothing for them.
Okay. No.
For them.
Here's another question for both of you. What do your neighbors think of the bees?
Our neighbors like it because all my hives are wildly painted.
Oh, so colorful.
Yeah, they're very colorful. They're fun.
I've seen pictures of that. That seems really fun. Yeah.
I don't have very many close neighbors, but they don't mind. I give them a jar of honey in the
that
fall.
That sweetens the deal pretty
much. And people
are
fairly fascinated with the whole thing. So I have no problem with our neighbors.
Okay.
Yeah, a few years ago, a young man, a boy, lived next door to us. He used to come over just routinely because he was interested. I'd call and say, I'm going to work the bees. You want to come over? He'd come over for 3 or 4 years. I don't remember.
He's probably going to grow up and be a beekeeper someday.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Here's another question. Boy, they're really coming in. Really great. I am a second-year beekeeper. I love the hobby and enjoy keeping the bees, but my primary goal is to get honey. We have 2 hives. Is it worth the effort to overwinter? Oh, this is a perfect segue into
Absolutely.
The overwinter.
Absolutely.
Or will we be better off to just start anew every spring? Okay. Who's
now, gonna, my what? First year, I didn't kill my bees, and I overwintered them, and I didn't overwinter them properly, so I came out with a weak hive in the spring. So I could have very easily at that point said, oh, it's not worth it. Next year, I overwintered properly, and I came out with beehives that were almost full size, almost a full regalia of bees ready to go.
Wow.
So you are definitely ahead of the game if you overwinter because you're not having bees that have to start from scratch, get used to a new area, there are a minimal
wait
number
for flowers
of bees.
To...
Wait for flowers, because mm-hmm. your overwintered bees, I don't know if this is true or not, but I like to think so, they remember mm-hmm. where stuff was. It seems, I swear to God, they remember.
They know where the good stuff
they
is.
They know where it is, and yeah. they know what to go look for.
Yeah.
And they continue going strong, and your honey comes in faster. They're not having to build up all the comb. Mm-hmm. They're ready to go. So, like we were talking about earlier, you have to have proper ventilation more than anything else. I shelter mine indoors. Mine are sheltered in a little shed that is perfectly dark. It has a red light when I want to go in and work on them.
This is in the winter?
In the winter. And it has a thermostatically controlled, just an inexpensive little fan.
Mm-hmm.
And
it blows a little warm air
Well,
in
it
there?
Pulls in cold air.
Oh, okay.
Pulls in fresh, cool air. And ventilates the hot, steamy air, because bees are hot. This room mm-hmm. is 8 by 8, roughly. And so when you have all those hives in there, they're putting off heat. And I never had to use heat in that room. It is an insulated shed. It's an insulated shed.
Interesting.
But you have to have a cold air intake and an exhaust fan. And it kicks in at 42 degrees. And it shuts off at 40.
Wow.
And that fan surprisingly runs a lot. But what it's doing is it's pulling out the humid air and pulling in fresh, clean air.
Interesting. I'm going to ask one more question. I'm wondering about the practice of caging the queen toward the end of the nectar flow. Does this help to produce more honey?
Oh, that's a long story.
It is a long story.
But trying to simplify as much as possible, every egg that the queen lays takes about 6 weeks before that. It's 3 weeks for that egg to hatch and turn into a bee, and another 3 weeks before it's old enough to go out and forage. I'm talking about the Anchorage Basin. It may be a little different out in the valley, but essentially here in the Anchorage Basin, the nectar flow is over the end of July. And so any egg that's laid after the 1st of July is what my cohort and I always used to call welfare bees. They grow up, they eat honey and pollen, and they die. They never produce anything.
Mm.
And so we always would cage. Well, I do it differently, but that's another story. So if you just don't have eggs in there, you are going to get more honey. Now, if you're going to winter, you have to release that queen, or at least in some way make sure they're queen right. That way you get young bees going into winter.
Mm.
And that's another advantage. Well, I have a whole, if you go to our website, you can find a paper I wrote on that.
The secondary benefit of caging your queen is you break a varroa mite cycle.
Yes.
Oh, talk about that.
Varroa mites are a really serious problem yep. with bees, honey
Even
bees.
In Alaska, we have
Well,
one.
The new packages, I ordered two new packages because I wanted to expand my bees and get some more hives going. My two packages that came up this spring were loaded in varroa mite.
And that is a small
bug.
It's
a tiny little parasitic mite.
Living right on the bee.
And it causes deformed bees, causes disease, because the bees are weakened. And by caging your queen, I also do a whole nother thing with a drone frame, but there's a whole nother program on hive maintenance that you could do separately.
Yeah.
But by caging your queen, the varroa mite needs 21 days. Well, that's exactly what the drone cell takes to mature and hatch out.
And they reproduce. They let the queen lays there. The queen, the mother, lays her eggs on the brood. So it's a larva that is being parasitized.
And it's when the poor little guy hatches out, and it's usually on the drones, not always, but usually, he's got illness, he's weak, or he's got deformed wings. But I mean, it's basically some blood-sucking little parasite is what this thing is.
Naturally occurring. Naturally
sometimes known as vampire mites.
Yes, they're horrible.
Yeah.
So by caging your queen where she cannot lay brood, she's not laying drones, you stop that cycle.
Interesting.
Because she doesn't have enough time to hatch out larvae in a worker cell. And you're not allowing your queen cells to hatch if you want to keep your hive intact.
Mm-hmm.
So it breaks the cycle, and you reduce your mite load in your hive. So it does have some benefits as well as stopping the brood just for honey production.
Do you apply medication?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
No.
I've never medicated my bees. Mm-mm.
I had to use powdered sugar on those two packages of bees.
Mm-hmm.
And I put powdered sugar on, which makes the bees slick.
Well,
and the mites,
yeah, something.
It helps.
Oh.
And the mites drop
slide
away.
Off.
But I also do something called a drone frame, which only has the right size cells. I let the bees build their own, which they will automatically do, for drone. And then I feed it to my chickens when they're all capped.
Oh.
And that gets rid of 90% of
them. Interesting.
I've never done that. My sole means of controlling varroa mites is breaking the brood cycle.
And it works perfectly.
Traditionally, a colony can last 2 years, and the third year they will die out from mites.
Huh.
I had one colony for 7 years, and they didn't have mites. I mean, I kept it going through 7 years, and they never had a mite problem.
Wow.
There's a method of counting your mites. You take a sticky paper and put it underneath for a 48-hour mite drop, they call it, and then you count the mites on there.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen more than two mites, and many times I never saw any.
Hmm.
And I just stopped counting them because they weren't a problem.
You might just be a good beekeeper.
Well, no, bees, I mean, you have to pay
bees.
Attention. They
yeah.
are work.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just leave them and ignore them.
Yeah.
Honeybees need care.
Yeah.
And they're worth the care.
Let me get some of these questions out, and then I want to come back and talk about how, you know, what's important to do. But would darker boxes help the bees warm up in the mornings, or is direct sunlight enough? So a lot of questions about the heat.
I have all colors.
I think that the darker colors may be of some help, but, you know, in the lower 48, most people paint their boxes all white to reflect heat because, you know, you have
too much
a
heat.
Lot hotter there.
Yeah.
I have never had bees get that hot. I don't think that we have enough heat. Even when it's 80 degrees here, the bees keep cool just fine.
Mm-hmm.
If I were living in the desert and it was 110 degrees out, I probably would want to paint them with some silver reflective paint or something.
Something to keep the heat down.
Yeah.
I don't think it can hurt.
Mm-hmm.
With my hives, they're all different colors. And
so
I don't see any difference in activity.
Okay.
No.
Interesting. Interesting.
Mine match the color of my house because that's the paint I had.
Pragmatic decision. Here's another. Michelle in the Valley says, thank you for the show. Hopefully some people will now better understand how critically important bees are to the nation as well as locally. I've banned all pesticides and non-organic fertilizer from my acre for a decade now. Thankfully, I have no neighbors to annoy with me with my annual spring crop of dandelions. Friends who visited are surprised by my staunch stance. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, you know, pesticides and herbicides. One thing I know about Alaska, our cooler temperatures sometimes keep those things around longer than they are in the lower 48.
Yes.
Do you both live sort of pesticide-free?
I do.
Oh, 100%. I don't use any pesticides.
I use no pesticides and herbicides.
Uh-huh.
Until the last couple of years, I didn't even use any artificial fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only doing that because my back is giving out on me. I can't. I have two big compost piles, and that's what I use
mm-hmm.
for fertilizer.
Yeah.
And bone meal.
And bone meal.
And I have found that by having a ecologically pollinator-friendly garden, it's friendly for everybody, including
right.
us,
mm-hmm.
and my cats and my dogs and
yeah,
the sheep
pets.
And the chickens
yeah.
and mm-hmm. whatever. But there's almost... I see little parasitic wasps in my garden, which help reduce the population of aphids
mm-hmm.
and scale and
mm-hmm.
all kinds of things that are in my garden.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to tolerate some, and it's part of nature.
Right.
But my plants, everything is healthier by not using pesticides.
Yeah.
If I have to resort to a pesticide, it is something like neem or pyrethrins, and I only spray those at night when the bees are sleeping.
Hmm.
Because both of those have low residual, and it's not, in fact, eventually none.
Yeah.
And it does not harm your bees.
And you're using those for what, other insects?
I actually haven't had to use it this year at all.
Mm-hmm.
But my first year in my greenhouse, I had a problem with aphids.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Aphids. Mm-hmm. Horrible aphids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used the neem oil.
Neem oil.
And I only spray it at night.
Uh-huh. Okay. And no ill effects.
It's dry and it's not something systemic like these artificial synthetic
right.
pesticides.
Yeah. Okay. I know there's a link on our website to Colorado has advanced this idea of bee-friendly neighborhoods. And if you can get 75 homes contiguous, that agree not to have pesticides or herbicides or anything, then you get a declaration that you're somehow bee friendly. And they're just trying to grow this concept to try to, you know, reduce the amount of pesticides.
One of the things I see a lot up here is most people are fairly aware. A lot of people that live here in Alaska seem to be fairly conscious of mm-hmm. environment and
mm-hmm. where their food's coming
where
from.
Where their food's coming from, because mm-hmm. it's hard for us to get food up
yeah.
here sometimes.
Well, yeah, when you think
but
about...
But also, yeah. I think most of my neighbors, from what I can tell, there's a few dandelions, and they don't seem to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just part of the everyday environment.
Well, yeah, it's such a construct, you know, the sort of green lawn. I mean,
it's a desert. It's a desert. There's nothing there for anybody other than our visual enjoyment.
Yeah.
And in our garden, we have one of the flowers that honeybees absolutely adore, happens to grow beautifully up here, and that's poppies. Any type of poppy. Any kind.
Oh,
Icelandic,
poppies.
Californian, Shirley, whatever. They love poppies.
And they will spread.
And it's okay because it's pretty to look at and the bees adore them. And
that's
roses
good.
Are wild roses.
Wild roses are good for bees.
I actually pulled off a frame on my hive. When I pulled it out, I could smell roses.
Wow.
So they must have had a day where they were all out getting rose pollen or nectar.
Yeah, you know, when people say they have fireweed honey, is that legit?
Yes.
It can be. I mean, people can say anything. But if you live in an area where there's nothing but fireweed, or your bees will area where there's nothing but fireweed or nothing much but fireweed,
it's going to be real clear.
You'll get a clear, almost like water.
Colored.
And that's that. You know, that's a kind of the hallmark of fireweed honey.
Yeah.
Is it's
clarity.
And clarity.
We have a ton of it, and I have a lot of clear honey.
And if you want pink honey, what do?
You're going to have to put color in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, in some parts of the world, there are flowers that produce a nectar that will give you a pinkish honey.
Uh-huh.
And even greenish, I've heard. Yeah. But mostly,
it's gonna be amber.
If you want to color it, you're going to have to color it.
Yeah.
Mostly, it's an amber color.
An amber color. We just have about, I don't know, 30 seconds. I guess I'd like to hear from each one of you your sort of favorite moment at your hive. What is it? Is it...
My favorite moment is when I open it up and I look in there and I see brood and I see a perfect honey arch, and my bees are happy and they're flying around and just contented.
Yeah. How about you, Tom?
Looking there first thing in the spring and you open it up and there's just wall-to-wall bees, beautiful, crowded
happy,
bees
healthy,
in there.
Healthy, ready to go
that.
To work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just sit out and watch them sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I
just
have a chair
be,
out
be
there.
With your bees.
Yeah. And they don't bother you.
Yeah.
You stay calm, they stay calm.
And one more little question. When you have a job to do, like, what is the work of doing? You said you can't just forget about them. And we don't have a whole lot of time.
Okay. Real quick, I would say keeping maintenance on queen cells in the summer during the swarm season and making sure in the fall.
Oh, we didn't even talk about swarms.
You need to have another program.
We do. You need to have another bee program.
You need to have a hive maintenance program.
Hive maintenance. Okay.
There we go. Hive management is called.
Hive management.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. So anyway, did you just... Oh, there we go. I knew it was coming, and there it is. Okay. I really want to thank our guest today. We had Tom Elliott, who's kept bees in Alaska for 33 years, and Dina Tangway, who overwinters her bees and plants a garden. Next week, we're going to have Charles Wolforth as your host, and he's going to be talking about restoring transportation relics. He has guests from the world of locomotives and aviation. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media, and Monica Gokey is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.